This is an adult-oriented podcast involving discussions about sex and the BDSM lifestyle. If you do not wish to hear about these things, or if you are under 18 years of age, stop listening now. This isn't the show for you. I torture you. And welcome back to Adventures in Kink. I'm BK.
I'm Princess Pita.
And today we do not have a guest. It's just us.
Yay. I mean, boo.
It's okay to have just us every now and then. I mean, it's our adventures, right? Today we have a few things we want to talk about. First, we want to discuss safe calls because that was a big topic in the negotiations episode. We touched on it and kind of explained what it was, but we wanted to go into more detail. So, Princess Pita, if you would start that discussion.
Safe calls are really important, especially when you are new to the community or new to just getting out in general. My first tiptoe into the lifestyle, I was on FET. I didn't know anybody in Dallas, and I'd have people trying to get me to meet with them. You know, random guys would message and you talk for a little bit and then they'd say, well, let's meet up. And 9 times out of 10, they're trying to get you to meet in private, which is never a good idea when you're first meeting someone.
No, it is not. Never.
But even in public, there's some danger there because there are some times where you may end up alone with a person that you don't really know. What a safe call is it gives you a way to check in with somebody without actually checking in. Because it's awkward to, you know, sometimes pull out a phone and let somebody know you're okay. But you should be doing that. Somebody should know where you are, who you're with, and have a regular set time that if they haven't heard from you by that time, they know to contact the authorities. And that's what a safe call is. They check in with you, so they will either call you or text you and make sure they get an answer back.
Usually at a predetermined time.
Right. So you basically set up with somebody, and it can be somebody you know. It could be a friend or a family member. It can be a stranger. Somebody. There are people out there in the community who are so concerned with everyone's safety, which is a fantastic thing, that they actually offer themselves as a safe call. And we actually have a group of friends that BK is going to mention here in a second who do that. And so you basically make an arrangement with them that says, I'm going to call you by this time, or you call me and check in with me by this time, to make sure that you're safe. And any decent person that you are meeting up with should be totally okay with that.
Yes.
They should be concerned about your safety as well. And if they have a problem with you checking in with a friend or a family member or a stranger, if they have a problem with you letting someone know you're okay or not okay, then they're not somebody you should be talking to.
And here's the neat thing about a safe call. They don't have to know it's a safe call.
Nope.
They should expect you have one, but it should be done in a manner that they don't know what's going on.
We do it in regular dating as well. We have that friend who calls.
Vanilla people do this all the time.
And, you know, if you give them a certain word to say you're okay, then they let you go. And if you give them the word that says you're not okay, then they tell you your kitchen's on fire and you need to leave. And that's a common thing in regular world dating. It's even more important.
And sometimes that doesn't work. Sometimes the word is indicating that you need the police. Call the police.
Yeah.
Because they should have the address of where you're going to be.
Yes.
That's part of it. So locally in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, the House of the Faithful Dragons has started doing safe calls. We found this out at the local Everybody Fourth Friday Munch, where the entire community comes together once a month, and they were handing out cards. And I asked them, could we include this on an episode? And we're going to create a spot for them so that this information is on every episode. We're going to try and include it in show notes and whatnot, so that everyone can have this information. If you are not in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, they cannot come to you, but I believe that they would still be willing, as long as it's not overburdening them in their house, that they would be willing to do a safe call for you depending on, you know, times and whatnot. Because if you're in Europe somewhere, the time zones may not align that it works out. But I imagine they will do everything they can to try and help. So you set it up. You let them be your safe call. Give them all the details, the date and time, the location, names of people involved. They will contact you at a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear or to summon the police if they need to on your behalf. The phone number is 972-591-3730. That phone number is active and available from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Outside of those hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible. So if you're trying to set up a safe call, try and do it between the hours of 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. That's reasonable.
Central time.
Central time, yes. They will get back with you. So try and do it a day or two in advance if you can. They're very wonderful people in this house. Most of them are very good friends of mine. Some of them are people I've met a few times, but I really love this idea. This is a great service. There's no charge for this. They are doing this out of kindness and service to the community.
Also, one word of warning. If you set up a safe call and then you forget about it and don't answer your phone or respond to your text message, be prepared to have the police show up where you are.
Yes. Always answer your safe call. And it's part
better
of
safe
keeping
than
you
sorry.
Safe.
Yeah.
Yes, better safe than sorry. And if they are taking this serious, they're going out of their way. I mean, these are very nice business cards. Mm-hmm. Two-sided. They're not cheap. They're taking this very serious.
Because our safety is a serious thing.
It is a very serious thing. And they're reliable people. All of them are very reliable people. Wonderful people. And I would have no problem doing this if I were in that situation.
Yeah.
I'm not. I'm here with you.
But the point is, don't put yourself, or try not to put yourself, in a position where your safety is in danger. You know, try not to meet up with a stranger in a private location. But if you must go out and meet with strangers, because how else are you going to meet people? At least have a safe call in place so that there is someone checking on you to make sure you're okay.
Right.
So speaking of meeting people without meeting them in private, strangers that you don't know.
Right.
We have talked several times now in our last few episodes about the importance of community.
Yes.
Because that's really the best way to meet people in a public setting where there's many people there and the chances of something going wrong or your safety being at risk are minimized. And one of the things we wanted to talk about today was what makes a good community.
I posted, and we're recording this later than normal because work and life happened.
And long weekend.
And it is a long weekend, so we are recording this on Labor Day. I did work all weekend, so we didn't really have a time to sit down and do this. We'd been planning this all week, and it just didn't work out because of various scheduling conflicts.
There are some weeks where your work schedule and my work schedule,
they don't like each other.
Not at all.
No.
We're ships passing in the night.
Mm-hmm. And so to the several people who are planning to come onto the show to discuss various things, we appreciate your patience in getting it scheduled. But getting all these schedules to line up is sometimes a nightmare. And I'm sure that everyone is aware that logistics are a thing. So, you know, we appreciate everyone's patience.
What do you think makes a good community?
Well, I posed the question in one of the groups that I lead on FetLife, and I posed it while I was at work on Sunday.
Sunday morning, yes.
So it's been about 24 hours, and I've had in a group that has four pages of people that are members. The one comment says, I said, what makes a good, strong community? And the response that I got, the only response was support, advice, listening. So
those are good things.
Those are good qualities.
Well, and I think part of the problem is that we're, you know, I think the communities kind of, they have a flow.
They do.
Sometimes they're a lot more active than others. And right now, our community, our personal Dallas community, is experiencing a lull because we're without a dungeon. We're without a public venue of any sort.
We have some clubs that are other use clubs that are hosting some rope events.
But they are open to the public, which a lot of us are not willing to risk.
Correct. The only real thing we have going on locally currently are a lot of house parties. And occasionally there's hotel parties. I know some groups like Bottoms Up did the back to school party, which is a multi-day hotel event. Some people in the local community organized a play night at a hotel in a ballroom.
Which I heard was fantastic.
Which I heard was absolutely fantastic. Everyone had a great time. There was a great energy in the room. But other than that, we are used to having a local dungeon that hosts events
every weekend and during the week.
Wednesdays and every Friday and Saturday. And Sunday afternoons, they host some things.
Some educational things.
Educational stuff, mentoring stuff. They were a host for a 12-step program, and that got shut down in May. And now it's September, and they're struggling. The community's struggling.
And the last information that we had from the organizers of this dungeon doesn't sound promising. It sounds to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like the city is making them jump through hoop after hoop after hoop. And at this point, I am not confident that the city is ever going to be satisfied.
To me, that's what I saw. It's the current issue that they're trying to overcome. They've stopped mentioning other things, which to me means you're going to solve this, fine. Then we're going to find another hoop for you.
Right.
And then we're going to find something else. And they're going to try and drag this out to lure every cent out of them, which I think is a shame. And I think the city's crooked for doing that. But
they don't want us there.
They don't want us there. But legally, they cannot say that.
So what's happening right now is that the people who run our dungeon, who own our dungeon, are spending every dime that they have and all the money donated by our community to try to get these permits that we need to open the dungeon back up. And yet every time we clear a hurdle, the city has something else. And so at this point in time, you know, they're starting a new fundraiser to try to get the next hurdle jumped. But when's it going to end? You know, it seems like the city is determined to keep it going until we have no funds left and we're without a public venue. And what I'm seeing as the impact to the community, at least as far as I'm concerned, is without a regular place to meet, the distance between people is growing. It is harder to stay in touch. It's harder to feel like you're part of something when you can't interact with like-minded people.
And you know, there's going to be some people who say, this is not true, this is not happening, but they're going to house parties, they're going to social events, because instead of it being a large community coming together, it's smaller, more local communities coming together and eating at a restaurant or going to a movie or having something at someone's house, which are smaller numbers.
And maybe I'm feeling something that other people aren't because I live so far away from where our local community is centered. It takes us over an hour to get to an event. Mm-hmm. And we're willing to do that, but we can't do it as often. And so we're seeing a lot of small community events pop up where the central group of people is able to meet. But I feel like people like me who are still relatively new to the community are not as welcome. And maybe that's just a personal perception of mine, but I don't know that I feel comfortable at a house party for people that I don't know well. And I don't know that they feel comfortable having me there because True. They don't know me as well.
They do a lot of, and I've read some of the things, they do vetting. So if you're new and no one knows you, you're
who's
out of luck.
Who's going to vet for you?
No one can vet you. No one knows that you're okay. No one knows you're a safe player. No one knows anything about you. You're not invited. I'm sorry.
And I think it's a shame.
I think that is a shame. But also, I don't begrudge the people for not allowing strangers into their home.
Yeah, it absolutely makes
we
sense.
We don't do that. It makes sense. And I have no problem with that. However, we don't have a way to meet.
And maybe it's a lot of stuff is still happening and I'm not seeing it because it's not coming through my feed.
And part of that is you've only been in the community locally for
a little over a year.
So the more active you are in the local community, the more people that know you, the more welcome you are at events. I know some people, and this is where I get to tell some stories because I have been around, who would go to events, they'd go to Fourth Friday, and they'd sit there and no one would talk to them. They'd go to the dungeon and they would watch. No one would talk to them. They would go to various things and no one would talk to them. And finally, they gave up. I know people who came to the community. They were on FetLife. I would reach out to them and talk to them. And I would invite, hey, I'm going to this group on this weekend. It's a really good group. Lots of fun. Why don't you come out? If you get scared, nervous, or whatever, you can hang out with me. You can hide behind me. You can watch my scene or whatever. You can be my shadow if you want to. You know, if you're not comfortable with something, come to me and if you want to go leave, I'll make sure that I'll escort you to your vehicle or whatever. And I had more people come and join. I doubled a group one time just from inviting people with that mindset because then they knew someone and they talked to someone that night and I was able to introduce them to other people. And then they had other friends. And then they didn't need me anymore. But they would still come. And more people would come. And a lot of people knew me because of that. And it wasn't because I knew everybody. But half the people knew me because they were there because I invited them. And I think more people should do that. You know, you can invite some of these new people. Hey, you need to be in the public. You need to be, let's bring you out. You can, and just kind of take them under your wing, mentor them, shadow them. Don't necessarily push them into a scene that they may not be ready for, but introduce them to people. That's the key. I think, you know, coming back to the being new in the community and going and doing as much as possible. How do you do that in a time when we don't have a venue?
Because we
lost our dungeon. The other private club that was hosting events regularly was not only closed, but demolished and made into a parking lot. Other venues have closed that people would meet at. And so those venues have changed and they're not necessarily as convenient for a lot of people. So, you know, times change. We have to change with them. What I say do is a new person. And I'm not, but I'm saying new people, you should maybe do this. Anytime you have a public community event that's close to you, whether it be social or a play party.
Or an outing,
go meet people. The Fourth Friday event that's hosted in Dallas every month for I don't know how many years now. Go. Every person almost in the Dallas, in Fort Worth community converge there. There's information for groups that are doing charitable things. Some of the programs are raffling baskets. You could win some toys. You could win a lot of good stuff. There's information about different groups there that some you might find interesting. The Diverse Interest Kingsters have so many specific interest groups. Subcategories, like they go to movies all the time. Anytime a big movie's coming out, they usually have a group going.
See a flick with Dick.
Yeah, they do game nights. They do other social things. And they're doing a play party. There are some people who are listening who live in an area where there is no community. And they want to be involved in a community. And we're kind of experiencing what they're experiencing, but we're having withdrawals from it, what they've never experienced. If you live somewhere where there is not a community, but there's a meeting maybe an hour away or something, make that drive. It's worth it to go meet people. Maybe you find that there's enough people in your local area within a 50-mile radius or so that you could host at a restaurant just a dinner, a munch, to talk with people who have the same interests. It's a lot of work to host a group and to host that much and to make sure that rules and etiquette and all that are followed, because consent, if you're having a discussion about being naked up on a thing, someone hitting you, you don't want a table full of children beside you hearing that. So you got to kind of, you know, monitor what you're saying sometimes. Right. So, you know, there's some people in some areas that have never experienced the community that we have, and we're having withdrawals from it, but they've never had it. And I think they're, some of them may be like, wow, y'all had such a great thing. I don't understand why y'all are so upset. We've never had that. Well, you know, I understand and I feel that, but I would hope that somewhere everyone would at least have some form of a community. And most places it's only online. I understand that. But try and find a way to get out and interact with people.
Right. Even if it's going to a big event like Bondage Expo Dallas or Denver or Winter Fire in D.C. or there's
Ropecraft or...
Yeah, there's events held all over the country that are BDSM weekend events or rope weekend events or Kinky Con and things like that. Like, there are a lot of big events and they're pricey, but they're also once a year rather than every weekend. And
are quite worth it.
Yes.
South Plains Leatherfest, Oklahoma Leatherfest. There's Leatherfests all across the country. Those have good educational classes and vendors.
Right.
Beyond Vanilla that they host in Dallas. Great educational classes and they have vendors. The Texas All-State Spanking Party, the Lone Star Spanking Party, the Crimson Moon Society, the Spankos all across this country. I'm only naming a few. I know
Dark Odyssey hosts events in several different states.
Yeah, there are events everywhere, major events. I believe I mentioned while talking on the last episode, if you look on FetLife, there is a major event happening almost every week somewhere in this country. Find the ones that are close to you. Find them early and you get better prices. Yeah. If you find them late, you can still go.
So to wrap up talking about community, the list I had made of the things that I thought made a good community were acceptance, education, being willing to bring the new people in and show them the ropes, literally and figuratively, outreach. So, you know, reach out to the people who come to your event, ask them how, you know, if they enjoyed it, you know, what you could do to make it better, or just, you know, make sure they're okay. Tell them you're glad they came. And then the last thing I had on here was self-monitoring. And that's something that we're seeing in Dallas as a backlash to the consent violation accusations from a few weeks ago. I think self-monitoring as a community is important, but you also have to be careful about how you do that. A lot of times the way it's set up is that the group leaders monitor their group.
Right.
They're responsible for responding to complaints or, you know, accusations that are lodged. The venue owners are responsible for responding when things are brought to their attention. Dungeon monitors, they're there to help people stay safe.
Yes.
What is happening right now is there is a group that is forming in the Dallas community. And so there's, you know, they're about to have a big discussion on safety and consent in the community and what they can do about it. And I hope it goes well. I'm concerned about the execution of it, but if it's done well and it's done right, I think it could be a really good thing. I just have some concerns that I hope that they address. So did you have anything to add about the importance of, or the things that make a good community? Because I've kind of mentioned my four.
I think that yours are very important. Education is very important. Acceptance, it's important, but to be accepted, you have to be out there.
Right.
It's kind of a catch-22. No one will accept me. Well, no one's met you. How can they accept you if they don't know who you are? Well, I'm right here on FetLife. I'm talking all the time. But that's not... It's different to talk behind a computer screen than it is to talk in person. You're a different person. And my... One of the things that I have done to try and help is I know there's a lot of people with a lot of really young kids. And there's a lot of people who work. And maybe they are into this and their spouse is not and won't... They can't go out on a weekend or whatever. But during a weekday when the kids are at school or whatever, they can come and have lunch with people of like minds. And so I hosted a daytime lunch up until I had to have knee surgery in March. At such time, those kind of waned away. We've had one since then at a cigar bar. And it's normally a weekday thing that I do, but I did it on a weekend.
So that I could go for once.
So that you could go. Exactly right. And so I'm going to try and get those going again. But there's people in the group, and I need their help. If we're going to do that, I need their help. Because with work and with the toy business that's a hobby, but sometimes it feels like a business. And with this podcast now, there's a lot of prep work goes into this. You know, and so I need help scheduling those things. And sometimes I may not be able to be there. I need help from my people in my groups. Thank you. That's my call. Do you have anything else you want to add?
Find a community, become part of it. You know, get out there, meet people, go to events, even if it's just having coffee. But get out there, meet people. Because once you get to know people, then you can start to feel more part of that community. And I think for those of us who are part of this lifestyle, we already feel like we are on the outskirts of society. It is important to find our people so that we don't feel alone.
That's true.
Because it's when you feel alone and rejected by society that you start to feel down about who you are and what you're doing. You start to feel like what you're doing is wrong.
And we don't ever want to think that.
No.
And we definitely don't want to feel that. Because everything that a lot of... There's people that experience that. What I'm doing must be wrong because no one will talk to me. But yet 15,000 other people are doing the exact same thing. And they're very popular. Well, what am I doing that's different?
And it's just, sometimes it's just luck. Sometimes people have these huge personalities that everyone is drawn to. All right. So we wanted, are we ready to do the book club?
Yeah.
All right. So I'm really excited about this next part because it was my idea. And
I'm excited too because it's education and I'm all about that.
So the book club was something that I came up with when we first started talking about the podcast, because that was how I got my start. I was reading everything I could get my hands on because I want to know everything about everything before I try it. And that is just the type of person I am.
That's a good thing.
I'm very cautious. So we decided that we were going to do a book club and we were going to pick an educational book, you know, about the lifestyle and go through it chapter by chapter and discuss what we read that week and learned. And if any of you are interested, you can please feel free to follow along, get the book, read the chapters. We'll announce them, you know, we announce it on our page. But this week we are starting the book. It's called Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, The Romance and Sexual Sorcery of Sadomasochism. And it's written by Philip Miller and Molly Devon.
Say the title one more time because there are two books with this similar title.
Yes. We want to make sure that we get the right book, Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns by Philip Miller. If you'll search by the author, that helps a lot.
Yes.
We read the first chapter, which is basically an introduction. Actually, we also read the introduction.
And the foreword and the pre-foreword.
I really like this book so far because they have a sense of humor and... That's important to me because some of this stuff can get really dry if you don't present it with a sense of humor.
Absolutely. The sense of humor that's in there really resonated with us because it's
Bad puns.
Bad puns, and it really follows with our sense of humor. Now, the book is a little dated in some places.
Yeah, it was originally published in 1995, I believe. Yes, first printing was in 1995. The version that we have is the 19th printing in 2005.
And as far as what I have seen, I have not seen another publishing past that.
This first chapter is basically an introduction to the lifestyle, and one of the things it has is a definition for different things, like what is a scene, what are top and bottom, dominant, submissive. And one of the things we noticed is that when they talk about gender identity, they still use some outdated terminology.
Yes. Transsexual is now pretty much transgendered across right. the board. I don't know of anyone still using the term transsexual.
But some of the information is still good
and the information valid. In there is valid.
Because the most important thing I got out of that section where it talks about people who identify as cross-dressing, transvestite, transsexual, or...
Three different distinct categories.
Right. That it's all very different. But also, the most important thing is if you don't know what pronoun to call someone, ask.
Just ask. Which is what we say. And every time we're going to have on the show, I've got two friends. One is a transvestite, looks like a female. That was their definition. Between crossdresser, just wears women's clothes. Transvestite tries to look like a woman. And then transgendered or transsexual, as they're calling it, actually identifies as another
gender.
Sex, gender. That they were from what they were born. But we do have, I have one of each, a transgendered friend of mine for several years, works with me. And the other friend is one of my group leaders in one of my groups and is a transvestite, dresses as a woman and presents as a female in public a lot of times, even as a male goes by the female name, but is not transgendered because identifies as a male.
Right.
That presents as female.
And the point that is made in the book that there are so many different layers. And right. The important thing is if you're not sure, ask. Because it's offensive to assume.
Always.
And most people would rather you ask them than make assumptions and step all over their feelings. We kind of got ahead of ourselves because we were talking about, you know, some of the things that are outdated.
Right.
Looking at this first chapter. So they introduce themselves. They talk about what the book is going to cover. The book is written from their experience. So everything is presented as male dominant, female submissive, which is fine. It, you know, those, the same principles carry over no matter what the makeup of the relationship is.
Right.
They
state that. They state that this is from our perspective and it's our book. And this is how we relate, so that's how we're going to word it. It's not saying that the other things aren't valid, they're not possible. It's saying that that's how they relate, but all the things that they talk about are relatable to other things.
You can translate it directly into any other makeup of relationship because the key values are the same. Communication, trust, those things carry over from relationship to relationship no matter how the people identify. So this book was written basically as a, not a how-to guide, but basically an introduction into the lifestyle. The first chapter really delves into what sadomasochism is, what BDSM. They don't call it BDSM in this book.
Because it was back right about the time that the words BDSM, that term, that acronym emerged.
So they refer to everything as sadomasochism, which... is generalizing because not everything we do involves sadism or masochism.
True.
But a lot of the tenets still hold, so we're still reading.
But they do mention BDSM at one point, I think. Was it in the foreword, maybe?
It might have been.
Or the intro? And they talk about SM and BDSM. They did explain all that in one of
those.
They broke it down.
Bondage and discipline, sadism, masochism. They also talk about being safe, sane, and consensual, which is...
We had that discussion.
You know, safe, sane, and consensual is a little bit older term. Now we use RAC, which is risk-aware consensual kink. But some people still use safe, sane, and consensual. One of my favorite lines at the beginning of the chapter says, Our society has a marvelous capacity for making the simplest of activities, sex in this case, an incredibly convoluted affair.
Very true. That's another thing that kind of bugs me about the book a little bit, is that they refer to this as purely sexual.
Yeah, everything when, is in terms of sexual gratification. As we know,
you can play and not have sex. You can have non-sexual play.
And they actually do say that, but I think because for them...
But it's written from their perspective.
Right.
And their point of view. And since they are a couple, it is sexual to them.
And they talk about how sadists and masochists don't do the things they do unless it brings the other person sexual pleasure. And I think that that's a little bit of a misnomer. Like, I don't think it's necessarily sexual pleasure. But it is pleasure.
Yes.
So, you know, that's just
if
semantics.
It's not pleasurable, we tend to not do those things. You know, like go to the mechanic just because we want to sit there for hours while our car is being fixed. It's not something we enjoy, and it is quite painful, especially to the bank account, usually. But it's not, so, you know, and they use some analogies like, you know, going to the dentist and not using Novocaine. You know, we still use Novocaine.
Masochist, it's not pain for pain's sake. It's right. Usually has some sort of purpose.
There's a purpose to the pain, and there's a goal with the pain. You're trying to go someplace, either mentally or spiritually, and you don't do it just to do it.
In their definition of what sadomasochism is, they talk about how power in our BDSM lifestyle flows from the bottom up. That it is the submissive...
Right.
Who actually gives the dominant an amount of control over her physical self, his or her physical self, based on that trust that is earned.
Right.
And then they can take it away at any point in time.
And they kind of walk through it in this chapter as an intro. And I think they're going to introduce it more later on. They talk about how the first time you can do this and this, but nothing below the waist. Don't touch anything below the waist.
They talk about negotiations.
They do. I believe they get into it more later on. But then it says the next time you play with that person, okay, you can fondle my boobs this time. And then eventually there's more and more trust as you go. As long as you don't cross the lines and break that trust, more things will be allowed later.
Well, and they also talk about not just that the levels of trust with your physical self get greater as you play, and that first scene goes well, so you renegotiate, you play again, and the levels of physicality that are allowed are
right.
extended because, you know, you trust that person a little bit more. But also they talk about over time, it becomes not just physical, but you start, the bottom would start to trust the top with more of their emotional and mental self as well.
Right. They start to let go more.
Right.
Which is always super rewarding as a top, because you're able to take them places that are far more, it's a more meaningful experience
right.
with a deeper connection than it is random pickup play or whatever. You're not going to get a lot out of that. You're going to experience some things that you may
get the endorphin rush, but you're not going to get that connection.
But that connection, because sometimes when I'm beating on you and you start to get all floaty and you don't realize how far out there you are, and I'm like stopping and you're like, I can keep going. I'm like, I don't think so. And then you stand up and you realize, okay, maybe not. I can feel where you are. And so I'm getting something out of where you are, even though you may not feel it, but we're so well connected that I can feel it.
Right.
See, and it's hard to put that into words.
And you have to build that.
You have to build up to that.
You don't have that right from the very first.
First time we played, we did not have that. We had a good connection, but we didn't.
But we also did not play immediately when we met.
No, we did not.
We waited at least, it was a month.
It was a good month.
Yeah, and of talking and getting to know each other as human beings before we ever had any kind of play. And even that was heavily negotiated.
Yes.
The scene was so. It wasn't, you know, oh, hey, I like this person, so I'm just going to let them do whatever they want. But there was a connection there. But the connection has grown deeper over time, and it still continues to grow deeper because our, you know, relationship grows deeper all the time.
Daily.
Yes.
Hourly sometimes.
They talk about misconceptions about BDSM.
Absolutely. And I like this part.
I'm going to read a little bit. SM is not abuse. Things that make our partners unhappy are bad things, and we leave them alone. We don't do things to our partners without their permission or because we're mad at each other. Abusive people don't ask for permission and act out of anger, and they sure as hell don't negotiate a beating. The things that we do to each other are done solely in the divine spirit of love and lust. So they make it very clear in this chapter the differentiation between BDSM and what we do and abusive relationships. And they actually point out like what an abusive relationship looks like versus ours.
Yes, they do. And it's very, very good. Yeah, the pictures that they paint with words on those two different distinctive things. Because some people just like, well, define that for me. I don't understand. They do it. They do it very well. This book is a very good read. I'm very impressed so far.
Oh, I like this line too. Simply knowing which end of the whip you prefer does not guarantee that you'll know what to do with it when you get one.
That is a true story. Using toys, whips, floggers even. Practice, practice, practice. I know a lot of people who swing whips. They throw whips all the time.
They're not necessarily practicing on people.
No. They will tell you if you're starting out with whips, you will practice for at least a year before you want to touch a person with your whip. A year. Some people are like, well, that's not worth it. I'm walking away. Well, if it's not worth it, then you may be in the wrong entertainment line here or whatever, because it's not a lifestyle. Because it's a skill, and you have to practice, and you have to hone, and you have to work on that. You don't have professional race car drivers who just got a license. They've been driving and driving. Yes. You don't have singers on the radio that just picked up a mic, walked in a studio, cut an album, and suddenly they're pop stars on the charts. No, it doesn't happen. They spend years
honing their craft.
Honing their craft. And it's the same way with people who use the toys. It takes a lot of practice. You can practice on a pillow, on the bed. With a whip, you can get the backyard, hang something up, and try and hit it. Try and hit the same mark over and over. But don't practice on a person, because you can cause some serious harm if you don't know what you're doing.
And this is one of my things that I am so passionate about as part of the community is
safety.
You may not know these things if you have not ventured out into the community or at least read
right.
good informative books. You know, you may say, oh, I've seen somebody whip somebody in some movie. I can do that. But if you don't have anybody to talk to say, hey, you might want to hold back on that. That's not a good idea. Then you are going to go make stupid mistakes. Yeah, they talk a lot about the importance of education in this book, which is one of the reasons that so far I love it. But they said, fortunately, many kind and patient people contributed their experience to our education because everybody makes mistakes.
Definitely.
And you have to learn and grow from them. And then after the introduction to what BDSM is and what it is not, they go into more definitions. And so I don't think we need to go into all of it. There were a few things that really stood out to us that we wanted to mention. It talks about what is a scene, what is playing, what is a player, sadomasochism, dominance and submission, bondage and discipline. What is a sadist? What is a masochist? What is a dominant? What is a submissive? Oh, in submissive, I highlighted. It says many submissives have a specific fantasy or set of fantasies they want to enact
ritualistically.
They will even give the dominant something very like a script detailing exactly what they expect to happen in a scene. And my first thought was maybe an experienced submissive would, but somebody who's relatively new to the lifestyle is not going to have a script to hand to a top to say what they're looking for in a scene. Oftentimes we don't even know what we're looking for in a scene.
You know, sometimes I had this happen once. They said, I want this to happen. And they gave me this big, long story that they had written. And I'm like, you've really only got about two things happening to you, a bare hand spanking and floggers. And then there's just a lot of sex. Now we've met once. We've never played. I'm not comfortable with this level of intimacy with someone I hardly know. And I would you may find some people who are, but there's so much more out there than of the six pages, four pages are nothing but sex. There's so much more. Maybe you should get some experience with what's available to you and then figure out what you want.
I don't like the idea, and this is just for me personally, I don't like the idea of coming to the top with a script and saying, I want you to do this, this, and then this, and then this, 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 because it really limits your experience. I prefer to say, you know, I'm interested in these types of toys. I'm interested in this type of sensation. I'd like to see, you know, this kind of exchange, and then let them create the scene. And, you know, list your limits. I do not want this, this, or this. Please stay away from this area. And then let the dominant create the scene, because that's what they're good at. That's what they have experience in, is building a scene, whereas I don't know how to do that.
The experience part of that's key. Because what if you come to someone, I want this, 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 and one of the things is knives, and they cut you and they don't know what the hell to do because they don't typically play with knives. What if you're asking a top to do something that they're not skilled in?
Well, hopefully they would say no.
Hopefully they would.
Because they have the right to say no as well.
They do. But if it's, you know, six pages and four pages are sex, some guys that are not experienced will, hey, can we do this part first?
Yeah. And then never get to the other.
Then never get to the other.
So anyway, I just thought that was an interesting line. That submissives will give the dominant something very like a script, because I don't find that to be the norm. And maybe it was 12 years ago, but it's definitely not now.
I don't know that it was ever the norm. I just think it's some people have fantasies and want to live that particular fantasy, which is fine as far as a particular scene, but do it with someone you know well that can do the things you want done.
There's a section in here where they specifically call out natural dominance and submissives.
Yeah.
And I can see where they're coming from a little bit. Like they basically define it as people who've known from a young age who they are, what they are, and they come by it naturally, as opposed to some people who discover it later in life or just say, hey, that looks interesting, I want to try it, and discover they like it and stay. I think it's really hard to define somebody as whether or not they're naturally dominant or submissive. I would actually say, okay, I came to it really late in life. I was 39 when I decided that I wanted to try these things. But I'd been reading about it for years.
Right.
I'd been fantasizing about it for a really long time. And I think my nature, I would say that I'm naturally submissive by nature. It was just not something I ever explored or even thought was possible until I started learning about the BDSM lifestyle. I'm not even sure I was aware that it existed until somewhere in my 30s.
Understanding your background, I think you probably didn't give it a second thought that it existed.
Well, you know, I was very restricted on what I was allowed to watch and what I was allowed to read when, right, I was young. So I think there were things that existed out in the world that I wasn't even aware of.
And I think part of that was just some sheltering.
Yeah, it was.
Not necessarily trying to keep things from you, but just sheltering.
No, my parents were protective. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing at all. No. It's just the way I was raised. So I think it's really hard. You cannot determine whether or not somebody is a natural dominant or submissive.
No.
That is something that is core within them. And so it's just really hard to define. But the section does have some things that I really did like. It talks about how there is a conjecture that sadists and masochists were abused as children. And one of their friends, who is a leading sexologist, debunks that myth and basically says most of us come from happy, healthy, non-abusive environments.
Yes. And I'm,
which is a good point to make, because I think that is a misconception a lot of the public sees.
Yeah.
We do this because we're messed up. We're fucked up in the head.
And the reason they've done that is because they came out and said most porn stars didn't have a dad in their life and they're just looking for a father figure. Well, if that's the kind of father figure they're looking for, they're looking in the wrong business.
Well, and I mean, there's still misconceptions like that within our community.
There are
a lot of people who are active and have been for a long time in the BDSM community who still judge those of us who have daddy baby girl relationships because, well, yeah, clearly that person has daddy issues and, mm-hmm, you know, came from an abusive environment. I have a wonderful father. My dad is probably one of the people I am closest to in the world.
I like your dad.
Yeah, my dad's fantastic. He's amazing. And so I don't have any kind of issues, but our relationship is still that of daddy and baby girl, and it right, works for us because that is the type of relationship that we found fit us best. So misconceptions happen both outside and inside right, the community. Here's one of my favorite parts. It talks about how the sexologist that they consulted with says that sexual inclinations tend to stay with a person. So the things that you find that are attractive to you sexually stay with you. A lot of people are afraid that if they get involved in BDSM, that it will take over their sex life, that they won't be able to have sex without it. And what this person says is that BDSM expands your sex life. It doesn't yes, limit it, because the things you liked before don't go away.
That hasn't changed.
Yeah. You don't change the things you like. You just expand them.
If you go to a buffet, knowing that they have steak and lobster and chicken fried steak, and you know you love chicken fried steak, but you've never had lobster, and you try it, and you like it, you still like chicken fried steak, but you also like lobster now. That's just
an interesting analogy, but it works.
Quick analogy yeah, that just popped into my head for some reason.
So BDSM broadens a person's scope rather than supplanting their desires for other variations.
Yes.
The section on tops and bottoms. Boy, did that get convoluted.
Boy, it did, didn't it?
Yeah. It talks about a top is not necessarily always a top, and a bottom is not necessarily always a bottom, and a top doesn't have to be dominant, and a bottom doesn't have to be submissive, and they're not necessarily sadists and masochists. And
topping,
sometimes they're
topping
both.
From the bottom and bottoming from the top, and I'm like, well, my head, ow, brain.
It's like four paragraphs of some of the most convoluted, confusing, but it's the way it works.
It really is.
Because not everybody defines themselves as one particular role. And so just because someone is a top doesn't mean they're necessarily a sadist, and it doesn't mean that they're actually dominant. It may mean that they just enjoy beating on people occasionally.
That's true. I know people who are service tops who are actually slaves or yeah, submissives. And they do it because their master, owner, mistress, whatever, is a masochist, slave. Take these floggers and beat me.
You can be a dominant type and enjoy
and still
pain
be a masochist.
Play. It's there's so many varieties
there
of
is,
things.
And you just got to find what's right for you.
Yep.
And the thing that killed me the most about this is the section where they covered switches, wasn't it?
Oh, the switch section is right after, yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, switches are, and then I'm just like, well, that's it?
Yeah, they go into all the confusing, like, you could be this, 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 and every variation of top and bottom, and then it defines a switch, and it says the switch is a person that plays the dominant and submissive sides of the game. Seemingly, this guy has the best of both worlds. Often, he's paired with another switch.
Which is
and
not always true.
And then it just talks
true,
about how, like, that puts him in a interesting position because he has to decide, does he want to be extra mean to his partner because he's going to get that back later when she tops? And then that's it. That's all they talk about. I'm like, God, that's really sells
They've
the switches
left
short.
So much out there because there's so much more to it than that.
Oh,
and
I know.
Hopefully they get into it later. If not, we will have to do something because switches, they're a very unique breed.
Yeah,
I find that most switches are people who are still exploring. Mm-hmm. They haven't decided which side of the slash they really land on.
Or if
they feel both
to,
sides,
yeah.
And it depends on what part of that themselves manifest. I'm feeling dominant today. I need someone to beat on, or I'm feeling submissive, and I really need a very therapeutic beating, you know? And it's not always being a masochist. Sometimes they just need a therapeutic, cathartic beating.
The book implies that switches generally play with other switches, and then they trade off.
Which is
not
entirely
true. And I find
that
to be like, that's probably the tiniest set of people in the switches.
I know some that are that way. I can think of two couples right off the top of my head, and that's about it.
I know one couple that's like that, but most of the people I've met who identify as a switch, top sometimes, they bottom sometimes, depends on how they feel. Sometimes they top in one particular area and bottom in the rest. We know somebody in the local community who does a lot of topping with wax, but is a masochist and bottoms for everything else. Mm-hmm.
There's
people who top with fire, but bottom for everything else. So, you know, switches are, gosh, they're a special breed. And I actually think that their lifestyle is pretty cool because they get to explore both sides of themselves. And I think sometimes a lot of us have a certain, it's kind of like the spectrum, you know, the gender orientation spectrum. There is a top bottom spectrum. And I think all of us fall somewhere along that. And it can change. You may identify solely as a bottom at this point in your journey, but you may discover that I actually kind of enjoy hitting on people and start exploring the top side.
The thing about that, though, is being a top is not necessarily being dominant.
Well, yeah, and that's an important distinction. That's an
important distinction. The ones who, like with the fire and the wax or thing, they're topping with wax, but they're not being dominant.
Right.
And they're very much more submissive side, most of them. Not all of them. Some are more dominant, but enjoy being on the bottom side every now and then. Because they wax is therapeutic and feels good.
A lot of people like it, whether they're tops or bottoms, yeah. Masochists,
and
sadists.
So a lot of people will bottom for that, mm-hmm. But they are dominant.
Right.
And you'll definitely get topping from the bottom.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. As
long as it's part of that, you know, situation and it's agreed upon between the people. I think they sold switches a little bit short there. I think that there's so much more complexity.
And again, I hope they get into it more later.
And we'll find out.
We will.
They talk about fetishes, mm-hmm. and what a fetish is. They talk about specifically what a fetish is as opposed to a kink.
Yes.
Because fetish is more of an obsession with something rather than just an interest in it.
Right.
Fetishes tend to be, you know, like foot worshiping or
panty sniffing, queening kind of thing. Yeah.
We list fetishes on Fet, but most of us, those are not really fetishes. They're kinks.
And when we could make them up, they were anything but real, most of them.
I miss being able to make up fetishes.
Oh, I do too.
This last section, I liked enough that I really want to read the whole section. Are you okay with it? Do you want to read it?
I'll read it.
Okay. So we're going to read the last section. It's called Simple Starts, Safe Starts.
Simple Starts, Safe Starts. All kidding aside for the moment, while it is a lot of fun when we're doing SM, we're messing with a person's mental state. That's why it works. It is said that 90% of sex is in the head. When SM works well, the joy and loving that are shared have no limit. When we fuck it up, we hurt feelings at best and create basket cases at worst. It's easy enough to do it right without having a PhD in psychology if you follow a few basic guidelines. The first person a good dominant learns to control is himself. Skillful, thoughtful planning, developing complete trust and sincere communication are the secrets to doing SM well. Contrary to the wealth of sadomaso mythology, a submissive is not chattel, a child, nor any less a person than her dominant. She is a real person with rights and feelings, not an object or a pet whose sole purpose is to be trained and controlled for her master's pleasure. And aside, some people are into that. We're not talking to you. We're talking in general.
But that is an agreed upon relationship dynamic.
Continuing. The submissive is also responsible for making her feelings known and maintaining genuine communication. This can be very difficult for a woman or a man in a submissive state. She is going to feel a strong resistance to criticizing her dominant at the risk of spoiling the mood. The balance is fragile. There's a lot more to be said about this, and there are a lot of physical safety issues to consider aside from the subjective mental issues. We'll cover those in their appropriate chapter. The proposition of being tied down and helpless is scary as hell. It should be. Careless bondage is dangerous, and the emotional intensity of a good SM or bondage scene is fantastically powerful. We are in this business of pushing limits, and sometimes we will push too hard. It happens to all of us. Submissives learn to be forgiving. Dominants learn to forgive yourselves and be careful. The point of SM is to get someone to surrender her physical self to you, and as surely as whips crack, her heart and mind will soon follow. Please take good care of these three items. People are very, very fragile beings. Even you tough guy sadists. Never be ashamed to drop the roles and the game when the going gets too rough, and always be ready to offer a hug and a kiss to remind each other what this is all about to begin with. Be honest, be trustworthy, be kind, be ever alert to the condition of the soul you are partnered with, dom or sub. The rewards are extraordinary and very much worth your trouble.
That whole section I thought was really powerful. So I really like that.
I agree. I think that is very powerful and poignant. And if that doesn't, for those who don't have the book and are not reading along, if that doesn't encourage you to make a purchase, I don't know what would, because that is very powerful.
I mean, that is really concisely put, but it is the essence of what we do.
Also, guys, if you're just like, oh, I ain't got time to read, there's naked pictures.
There are.
I thought, you know, it might help. And then we might actually read it and enjoy it.
And it, the humor helps. Because
the humor does help.
You know, there's a lot of educational stuff in there, but the touch of humor, the puns, the little personal perspectives help.
I know that
help.
That part I read there didn't have many puns or humor, but it's a very serious thing, and I thought it was great.
Well, the section, just a couple sections before that, the title of the section was He is She and She is He and I am the Walrus, Cuckoo Cuckoo.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a sense of humor. It's fun. So anyway, I'm enjoying the book so far.
So far, it has been really enjoyable, and I'm looking forward to diving into it even further.
I really hope that other people will get the book and read along with us so that we can have some discussions on the FET page. I think it would be good for me to be able to talk to other people, and we could share what other people think besides just you and me, because,
yeah,
you know,
I agree.
There
and
are
I
other
know
perspectives out there.
We don't necessarily have a group on FET Life for the podcast.
No, but we have our FET page, which
we do
can
have our
talk
FET
on
page.
That.
We can do a writing, and we will post one about chapter one, and you can discuss it. And then we will subsequently post chapter two. And if you have some input and you don't mind us, you know, using your FET name or whatever you choose,
or just your words,
whatever, let us know that. You can email us directly, adventuresinkink@gmail.com, or send us a FET mail. And give us your thoughts and let us know. If you want us to include your FET name, we will. If not, we won't. Because, you know, consent is real. And we're all for consent. And would not. And that's why we put that out there. Because we don't want to, you know, say someone's name and not have consent.
Right. But, you know, we would love the opportunity to discuss what the different things that are in here with other people. I mean, it's going to get really deep into actual, like, different activities and, you know, the safety issues behind different things, the how-tos. There's a how-to on fisting in here.
That's awesome.
that was just the page that I flipped to. But there's all kinds of stuff in here. And then there's this, in the back, supposedly there's a section on toys with instructions on how to make your own toys.
Yeah, I think that'd be cool. I may learn to make some new things.
Yeah. So, and then there's like an entire glossary. Gosh, the glossary is huge.
The glossary is huge and index. And
they have support group listings. They have stores
like
and suppliers.
Like national
and artisans.
International
yeah.
things.
So I think it's a really, really good resource. I'm excited about it. I'm really enjoying reading it so far. And I hope other people will join us.
I hope so too.
Thank you for joining us. It's been a good discussion today, I think.
It was a great discussion. We had a good time in the book club, and we look forward to being back next week. We do not know what we're doing next week as a topic yet, so tune in and find out. So, just a reminder, let a dragon be your safe call. House of the Faithful Dragons is offering safe call as a service to anyone that needs one. Just give them the details, date and time, location, names of people involved, and we'll contact you at a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear from you or to summon the police on your behalf if you cannot. 972-591-3730, 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time. That's 972-591-3730 from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time. Outside of those hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible to make all the arrangements.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Have good adventures.
You know how you like your rope. Our friends at Minawashi cater to those that are particular about their rope and choose to condition it themselves. Let them provide you the highest quality unfinished jute rope so you can have your rope your way. Custom rope available upon request. Go to www.mynawashi.com. That's www.mynawashi.com. Or email them at mynawashi@gmail.com.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Statistics show 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and it affects many others, family, friends, and loved ones. Breast cancer is the second leading cause of death among women. To help the fight and raise awareness this October, Minawashi Rope, along with a collection of rope vendors, will be donating 20% of all sales from their pink rope and pink rope kits to their favorite breast cancer charity to help eradicate this disease. Head to www.pinkropes.com to find Pink Rope campaign products. I torture you.